Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. There will be a court hearing today on whether the White House ignored a judge's order and went ahead with the deportation of Venezuelan gang members. CBS's Scott McFarlane on what the ACLU wants.
Order the Trump administration turn over information about the flight. When did it take off? When did it land? When did the Trump administration know the order was to turn the plane around?
President Trump and Russian President Putin will speak tomorrow about the war in Ukraine. CBS's Holly Williams is in Kyiv.
Some people in this country fear that President Trump may agree to ceasefire terms unacceptable to Ukraine.
CBS's Weijia Jiang reports President Trump is heading to the Kennedy Center shortly for the first time since installing himself as chairman.
He has made clear that he has a new vision for the Kennedy Center, which is world renowned for its arts and performing arts. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say.
CBS News Brief. I'm Cammie McCormick.
Hi, this is Beth, inviting you to join me for The Kitchen's Open, the show within the show each Monday morning at 9 a.m. on The Morning Show on WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. One man is hospitalized in serious condition after being shot in the village of Amherst. On Sunday, the Portage County Sheriff's Office responded to the report of the shooting to a location on Mill Street. They found 43-year-old Ryan Ovojkovich, who had sustained a gunshot wound. Ryan was transported by Amherst Ambulance to the Stevens Point Airport, where he was flown by medevac to Wausau. Officers arrested 42-year-old Justin Ovojkovich after investigating the incident. They found a verbal altercation had broken out between the two men, and it turned physical. Justin Ovojkovich is booked into the Portage County Jail on a charge of attempted first-degree intentional homicide. The investigation is ongoing. This was an isolated incident, and there is no danger to the public. If you live in the village of Port Edwards, the park restrooms opened up last Friday. They will be open daily from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Today is the first day of brush pickup. It'll be picked up every other week throughout the season. Grass and leaf pickup begins on April 14th. The village garage sale is scheduled for May 17th. The sun is shining and the temps are warm, but the high winds bring the possibility of wildfires. Our meteorologist, Brittany Merlot, has more.
And with temperatures warming up today and winds whipping up to 40 miles per hour, there is a high fire danger. Burn bans are in place, and you need to be careful with equipment sparking, and definitely don't toss your cigarette butt anywhere.
There's an exotic pet surrender event happening later this month. If you're no longer able to care for your exotic pet, you can surrender them with no questions asked on Friday, March 28th. It's from noon to 3 p.m. at the Holiday Inn Convention Center in Stevens Point. They'll accept fish, invertebrates, reptiles, pet birds, small animals, and plants. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks bow to the Thunder. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks losing to the Thunder 121-105. Doc Rivers says about the only guy to play with any effort last night was Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I thought Giannis really came with the right intentions, and I thought there's games, guys, that you have in the year that one team has understands the bigness of the game and the other team doesn't. And you can feel it, you can see it.
The Bucks have lost four of their last six games. College basketball, Marquette headed to the NCAA tournament for the fourth year in a row. They'll play New Mexico Friday night. The Badgers got into the big dance. They'll take on Montana on Thursday after losing in the finals of the Big Ten tournament to Michigan yesterday, 59-53.
This one stings, but as I told the team, I couldn't ask for any more in terms of what they've given us and how they played today, other than we didn't make shots.
That's Badgers head coach Greg Gard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Partly sunny and breezy today, with winds whipping out of the south, gusting up to 30 to 40 miles per hour. It's creating a high fire danger. It'll also warm us up today to the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, we become mostly cloudy, staying mild and breezy as the storm system sits on our back doorstep. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, currently 53 degrees.
When a parent sees their child smile, they see hope. Aleem hoped that his son Rajib would have an easier life than he had. You see, Rajib, just like his father, was born with a cleft. But thanks to Smile Train, both father and son received free, life-changing surgeries, transforming their smiles into symbols of hope. To learn more and support the Global Clef community, visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, changing the world one smile at a time.
Matt Nair on air.
Will Westmoreland is joining us now. He is a farmer in southwestern Missouri.
This is an 80-20 Republican area down here. You can't throw a rock without hitting a Republican. And I still know all the guys I graduated with. So I always ask, don't admit you were wrong. Just admit you were lied to. That's a lot easier to do. If you just admit you were lied to, you can get over here with us and start working to fight the problem.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, we talk aliens with paranormal investigator Todd Michaels, and Flick's Brewhouse brewmaster Dave Hansen joins the show to talk about the new Nightlight beer. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Day to ye. My name is Maggie Hayes, and you're listening to The Maggie Hayes Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just kidding, everybody. It's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And this wonderful Irish whistle that you're listening to is coming to you live from our studio. His name is Jeff Kazak. He's a tin whistle player with the Irish Fest School of Music in Milwaukee. Let's take a little bit more of a listen as Jeff wraps up. Patrick's Day, Jeff, and thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
It's wonderful to be here, folks. If you are just tuning in, again, this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. We are taking a reprieve, as it were, from the politics of the day. Not to worry, everyone. We'll get back to those regularly scheduled political discussions tomorrow. But today, it is going to be all St. Patrick's Day, all afternoon long here on The Maggie Dawn Show. As I mentioned before, I am very excited to be joined for this first half hour by Jeff Kazak. He's a tin whistle player, I believe, amongst other instruments.
That is correct, yep.
Yes, multi-instrument artist here with the Irish Fest School of Music based out of Milwaukee. Jeff, again, thank you so much for making time. Do you have any special plans today for St. Patty's?
Oddly enough, not so much. The bands I played with, played over the weekend a few times.
Big weekend.
And didn't really have anything booked on St. Patrick's Day itself this year.
Yeah, so when it lands on a school day, least of which a Monday, maybe a little less. I did bring a Guinness for you, Jeff, if you prefer to take one to go after we're done with this bit of work here.
I'll probably take you up on that.
There you go. That's why I brought them in. And happy St. Patrick's Day to every single one of you. If you would like to ask Jeff or myself a question, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Jeff, Irish music is a big deal in the Midwest. I lived in New York for a while, obviously really big deal on the East Coast as well. But as you and I were talking about before we got on the air, Irish music and Scotch-Irish music has really had an impact on almost an innumerable number of American musical genres.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, early in this country's history, of course, you had immigrants that were Scotch-Irish that came over, settled in the Appalachian Mountain region in the southern U.S. And really, that's kind of where the old-time Appalachian fiddling tradition comes from, as well as crossover with Scottish and Irish songs that were just kept in that community and handed down for generations.
Yes.
And then through there, you have the intersection with black string bands.
Yes.
Like Carolina Chocolate Drops have done great research on this cross-pollinization between African-American musicians with their string tradition and Irish bones playing, kind of rhythmic bones playing came into the American tradition through Ireland and Irish musicians. And then, of course, you know, then you have a straight shot into bluegrass music and then straight shot into country music.
Yep.
So it touches on all those kind of Southern traditions as well.
Yeah, it's interconnectedness.
Absolutely.
And the fact that Irish music and Scotch-Irish music here in the United States really evolved, bringing in these other traditions and then creating something altogether new.
Exactly.
Which is really pretty magical. It looked like you wanted to say something else and I had cut you off, Jeff. Okay.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay. I want to be sure that people hear from you, not me. You are the expert. Again, folks, if you're just joining in, happy St. Patrick's Day to one and all. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got Jeff Kazak with us from the Irish Fest School of Music in Milwaukee. What got you into playing Irish music, Jeff?
Yes.
Did you start out in a different musical category? Because I did.
Yep. Same here. So I would say I'm originally a jazz sax player. So I played saxophone, college, jazz performance major.
You were the cool kids. I was an orchestra. We were not the cool kids. Jeff was a cool kid.
I still think at the time you maybe not looked at as too cool being jazz people, but
I'm gonna call you cool.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, there you go.
So I was living in Cedar Rapids, Iowa after I graduated from college and playing in jazz bands, and then I started listening to the Thistle and Shamrock radio show from Fiona Ritchie on the local NPR station and a couple other Celtic stations. It got me thinking, well, you know, this is kind of a cool musical genre. I like to pick up the tin whistle just as, you know, a fun thing to do as a hobby or something that's not, you know, serious in, you know, the saxophone jazz world. And I was completely blown away by the music itself, but also the intricacies and complexities to a music that a lot of people assume is very simple, but it's got a lot under the surface.
It can be simple.
Yeah, it can
right?
be.
Which is what so Jeff and I were talking before. I was really lucky. My mom, as we'll discuss later in the show, she has the Irish background in my family, very into genealogy. And when she heard when I was in high school and I was playing the violin a lot, classically trained, but was in a strolling group, she had heard that a very famous Irish fiddler by the name of Eileen Ivers was going to effectively do a short-term like residency at UWM and was opening classes up to everybody. Anyways, I went and took some of those classes. And what I loved about Irish music was it had lots of easy access points for a musician. Some of it can be very simple, but you can actually take a very simple jig and or a reel or whatever it is and turn it into something that sounds so much more complicated.
Absolutely, yep.
So I thought, let's start there, if you could, because I think a lot of people hear Irish music and they go, oh, it just all sounds the same.
Yep.
So I thought maybe, Jeff, if you could help folks understand the difference between two very popular formats, which hear Irish jigs, and there's also reels, and they're actually different. They're both dance music.
Yep.
But they're different. Can you explain what's different about them and then maybe give us a little sample?
So for the School of Music, a lot of times we use mnemonic devices to teach the patterns and rhythms of the dance tunes. So the one that we give jigs a lot is rashers and sausages, rashers and sausages. So it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Everybody at home, rashers and sausages, rashers and sausages.
Or if you're of age in the persuasion, bottles of Jameson, bottles of Jameson.
There we go.
So it's for those who are musically inclined, it's in 6/8 time. By comparison, a reel is in kind of a cut time for 4 rhythm. And so one of the mnemonic devices that we use is watermelon, 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 watermelon.
Watermelon, watermelon, watermelon.
So it's kind of driving
It's
got a pulse to it. Yep.
That's one of the things that's really can be extremely complicated about Irish music is actually the time that it's in, whether it's 4/4 time, 6/8 time, though those meters can get very complicated, as well as some of the syncopation that you hear within it. And Jeff, be sure you're talking right on into the mic. Let's give folks a little. So let's start with, what is it? Bangers and sausages.
Yeah,
what is it?
Rashers and sausages.
Rashers.
Tune I started off with Jimmy Ward's jig is a jig.
Okay.
So.
Rashers and sausages.
So, and then I was doing.
And you can hear the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yep.
1, 2, 3, rashers and sausages. So, by comparison, then let's, let me think of a reel here.
Putting Jeff on the spot.
One, two, three, four.
Moving right along.
Yeah, they're fast dance tunes. I mean, that's really the function originally was for dancers.
And if you don't have your cardio in shape, folks, you might want to take it a little slow joining the Irish dances. So that's the difference between reels and jigs. Is a lot of the differentiation in the time, in the beat or measure of the music?
Yeah, that and kind of, you know, the underlying pulse or swing to the tunes as well. So, you know, and maybe that's one reason why Irish music kind of caught my ear as well, because they have kind of a swing to it that you would find in jazz. So especially like a hornpipe, which is another tune that's in 4-4, like a reel, but it's got a swing rhythm to it. So example is a tune Off to California.
Yep, you hear it in there.
Bouncy rhythm to that one.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Has that very distinct Irish sound to it.
Yeah.
The other sort of area of music, in addition to these more familiar dance tunes and rhythms that we hear, is some of what I'm going to call almost elegiac, right? Mourning music.
Yeah.
Of the land left behind, of family left behind, of course, of the loves lost, always. Uh-huh. Do you have a little bit of one of those that you might play for us?
Not so much playing-wise. I can chat a little bit about kind of the history behind those, which I find very fascinating.
We've got about a minute, then you'll play us out, then we'll come back with Jeff. So nobody go anywhere, but tell us a little bit about those more elegiac.
So the elegiac ones, I mean, definitely ties into, you know, the immigration that you've seen leaving Ireland, coming to America or other places throughout the world. So there's always been these songs where the topics are kind of longing to go back to Ireland.
Yes.
As well, as like you said, love songs, you know, drinking songs. But then those songs of remembrance kind of make their way into Tin Pan Alley.
Yes.
The turn of the 20th century. So a lot of those songs were Irish themed. But really with that kind of, you know, Ireland back home is beautiful and idyllic and we'd love to go back there. And so you have that kind of genre of music that becomes very intertwined with Irish America.
Folks, if you're just joining us, you are hearing the smooth, dulcet tones of Jeff Kazak of the Irish Fest School of Music here playing a little live tin whistle for us. He's going to play us out. We're going to take care of some business quite quickly. And we'll be right back with more discussion with Jeff Kazak. Here's a little bit more tin whistle.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Better begins with human kindness. It's in a smile, a listening ear, a helping hand. At Aspirus Health, better begins with knowing you and your family, learning your health journey and your health needs. Aspirus caregivers are here to listen and provide the personalized care you deserve. For when you need to be better, better begins at Aspirus Health. Passion for excellence. Compassion for people.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Folks, we've got to talk about Derek Van Orden. The second-term congressman representing Wisconsin's 3rd District is at it again, dodging public meetings and making all kinds of unhinged comments.
as many scramble and struggle to understand the chaos of what's happening in Washington, D.C. and how it's impacting people here in Wisconsin, Van Orden has been as frustrating and disrespectful as ever. In one instance, Van Orden took to social media to berate a veteran who had been fired from his job at the VA by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. And the veteran in question is simply someone who was just reaching out to his congressman, looking for answers. Van Orden's office has also hastily canceled public meetings, and he has made some especially wild accusations about people who have been attending these public events. Congressman Van Orden needs to stop this unhinged madness, and more importantly, be more available and accountable to his constituents.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information, and WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome back, everybody. That is Jeff Kazak, a tin whistle player, joining us live here in studio for a celebration of St. Patrick's Day right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Folks, we always got to take a little bit of a break from the politics of it all. It will all still be there tomorrow, and I will be talking about it, of course. But today we are celebrating Irish Heritage and St. Patrick's Day. We're starting out our show today with Jeff Kazak, again of the Irish Fest School of Music, playing a little live tin whistle here in the studio, which is just fantastic. We've been talking about the differences between some of the types of Irish music. And here's one of the other things I wanted to point out to people. Irish also has its own version of polka.
Yes. Yeah.
And a lot of people, they hear polka and they go, well, that's Polish.
Yep.
And as a very proud German-Irish, Polish, Milwaukeean with a bunch of other things thrown in, there is Irish polka as well. Is it super distinguishable when you hear it, Jeff, from more traditional Polish polka? And if so, how do people tell the difference?
Yeah, I mean, you'll hear a similarity to Polish and German polkas, like that lift is there still, kind of that bounce that you have in polkas. But it's a little bit, just has that Irish flavor to it. And it's fascinating because it kind of stems from, a lot of people don't realize this, but the polka itself coming from Czechoslovakia and Poland was kind of a dance craze throughout Europe in the mid 1800s. It was like the Macarena or something, you know,
where everybody, I didn't know that.
Everybody had to do the polka. So it kind of traveled across Europe and made its way to Ireland. And they really took hold in the southwestern part of Ireland, Cork and Kerry and Limerick counties, known as the Slieve Lucra area. There's polkas that occur in the north and, Sligo, Donegal as well, but they're typically a little bit slower. The Slieve Lucra polkas in the southwest corner are particularly lively and fast, and set dancers love the polka.
Yes, absolutely. It's such a fun couples dance.
Oh,
again,
it is, yeah.
I have given myself blisters and sore knees from over polkaing at Polish Fest and weddings throughout my lifetime. Before I forget to do this, Jeff, if someone has no experience playing Irish music or they'd like to learn more about it, how do they find the Irish Fest School of Music in Milwaukee? And where do they go? Do you have a website? Can they give you all a call?
Yeah, we have IrishFestSchoolOfMusic.com. So we have information about our private instructors and classes. You can check that out, enroll online, or give us a call with questions. And we also have the week before Irish Fest itself, we have the Irish Fest School of Music, or Irish Fest Summer School, pardon me. It's IrishFestSummerSchool.com. It's that website where we have or utilize some of the instructors or musicians that come in for the festival to teach music classes. Cultural experts will give presentations and teach Irish language, Irish dance. So it's a good way to kind of immerse yourself real quickly in Irish culture.
Yeah, a crash summer course.
It is, yeah. It's like Irish almost, culture almost like and a special immersion week, and then you going to Irish Fest.
Jeff, we were laughing beforehand. I had half a hankering today to like bust out my fiddle and join you. But we will have Jeff back and maybe a couple of other musicians from the Irish Fest School of Music before Irish Fest. Yes. I will get out my fiddle.
That'd
we
be
will
great.
Do some more live music. That way, at least my mistakes will be covered up by actual decent musicians. But I have to tell you, it's one of those things when you don't play for a while. And I don't know if you've ever gone through a period in your life where you haven't played for a while, but it's been about 2 years since I've played a lot.
Right on, yeah.
And I hear things and I remember where I played them and I have this like deep sense of longing and loss. This has put the bug back in me, Jeff. I have
good.
To. And my mother, if she's listening, you'll be very happy to know, Mom, I'm going to go to the Irish Fest School of Music and sign up for some classes.
Yes, please do.
Because it's been a joyful day for me because I turned off the political news, turned on all different gamut of Irish music. And people don't recognize there's a lot of... like Irish music has evolved into sort of its own like rock pop. There's a lot of that out there.
Yeah.
Gaelic Storm, very popular. They always sell out. I love the fact that in the lead up to either St. Patrick's Day or Irish Fest, you always see a bunch of Irish music shows in and around Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yep. Folks show up.
I mean, this March has been insane.
Busy.
Quite literally how busy it has been for Irish shows in Milwaukee and throughout Wisconsin. Yeah.
Is there a good hub to go to if people are interested in seeing local Irish music?
Yeah. So there's a couple of resources. So if you go to the Celtic Milwaukee website, which is the parent organization of Irish Fest, it's CelticMKE.com. We do have an events calendar with upcoming concerts. And then if you're interested in just either sitting in on an Irish session, which is an informal gathering of musicians, or just like to watch and listen on the Irish Fest School of Music website, we do have a calendar of local and Wisconsin-based sessions that are happening.
I'll check that out for sure. Because like doing a session, we were talking before, I was a classically trained violinist. And it wasn't until later, like I almost burnt out on it. And then my mom made an effort to get me involved in different kinds of music where you didn't read music at all.
Yeah.
You either had like chord charts or the basic elements of what the tune was, and the rest of it you just learn by ear.
Yep.
And that's so enjoyable. It's sort of like, forget the constrictions.
Yeah, that's one thing that draws people to learning Irish music, because that is an oral tradition. So
yes,
through the school, we try to teach orally primarily, so it's by ear. We'll teach tunes by repetition, so you don't necessarily have to read sheet music to be able to play the music. And really, that's kind of like this absorption method is kind of the way that music was handed down for generations.
Yeah, and immersion, you heard it's so cool. I wanted to give people just a couple more tidbits of like, how do you know you're hearing an Irish fiddle versus something that's not? And we're going to use Irish music throughout the show, folks. But a couple of the things that I remembered, and tell me if I'm getting any of this wrong, Jeff, was like the bow crunching and bouncing to get those really driving rhythms. The trills.
Yep.
The like lead up where you're not just a trill, but like the up and down right around a note.
Yep.
What else did I'm forgetting a couple of things, the crunching, the trills. Oh, the slides, of course,
sliding into notes.
Yeah, so which is great. If you get the note a little wrong, you just keep sliding until you get
it right. Yep.
It's fantastic. I can't believe we're already out of time.
Oh,
Jeff.
Wow. It was fast.
It was so fast. This is why you're going to have to come back. And I will play with you the next time.
Let's do it. Yeah,
because you're
great.
Making me deeply jealous. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Jeff Kazak of the Irish Fest School of Music. You can find out more at irishfestschoolofmusic.mke or celticmke.com. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, Maggie. Thanks for having us.
So much fun. The fun continues as we celebrate Irish culture and heritage here in the state of Wisconsin. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Jeff.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
We're going to be right back with folks from the Irish Heritage Center here in Wisconsin. You're not going to want to miss a minute. Come back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
You know, for most people, retirement brings about a celebration. But if you're a farmer, that's not always the case. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Monday. You know, that normal celebration doesn't necessarily occur if you're a farmer retiring. A couple different reasons. The main one being, if I'm not a farmer, then who am I? Wesley Tucker is a University of Missouri Extension Farm Transition Specialist who was in Wisconsin last week during the Professional Dairy Producers Conference. He works with farmers to help them maintain their identity after retirement.
It is very difficult for a farmer to what we consider retire because they lose their identity with that. And so it's very, very common for farmers to hold on to very strongly the control of the operation as well as the ownership of the operation until they die because they want to farm until they die, essentially. My education, I work a lot on helping them understand that they are still a farmer. They are still vitally important. They're actually probably more important in the role of a coach or a mentor to the next generation than they are whenever they are calling all the shots.
That's Wesley Tucker. He's a University of Missouri Extension Specialist. He said, trying to prepare yourself mentally for the transition that's going to happen when you retire from farming is critically important, not only for the farmer's mental health, but for the success of farm succession planning as well.
$1 billion. That's how much equipment is stolen from U.S. construction sites every year. These thieves are stalling projects, hurting Wisconsin's family-owned businesses, and driving up costs for everyone. Judge Brad Schimmel takes theft seriously. He holds criminals accountable and protects the people who are just trying to do their jobs. Call Judge Schimmel and thank him for protecting us. Paid for by the Associated Builders and Contractors of Wisconsin.
Don't let sick calves get you down and drain your profits. Get your calves up and moving with BioVet's Calf Electrolyte. Our Baselite product contains balanced electrolytes for restoring and maintaining proper fluid levels in scouring calves. Baselite also provides additional energy to support recovery. It's easy to mix, and calves are easy to drink it down to the last drop. Learn more about Baselite at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
And the Save Our Songbird organization in Wisconsin, hoping you'll pitch in and help to do what you can and keep birds from colliding with windows. A study out last year showed that in the United States, about 3.5 billion birds were killed by striking windows in that year alone. You can find out more details on our website, MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm Pam Yonke.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Partly sunny and breezy today, with winds whipping out of the south, gusting up to 30 to 40 miles per hour. It's creating a high fire danger. It'll also warm us up today to the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, we become mostly cloudy, staying mild and breezy as the storm system sits on our back doorstep. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 51 degrees.
I used to smoke. I thought of cigarettes as my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend, and then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. Hopefully your St. Patrick's headache has gone away. We'll be discussing top broadband officials exiting the U.S. Department of Commerce, what it means for broadband in Wisconsin. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Welcome, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Very excited to welcome next to the show, Corey Webster with the Irish Heritage Center out of Milwaukee. Thanks so much for being here, Corey, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Oh, happy St. Patrick's Day to you as well, Maggie. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us, what is the Irish Heritage Center all about? And folks, if you've got a question for Corey or I, you'd like to share some of your family's Irish history, ancestry, culture, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Hats off to Sherry and Ollie and Kimber and Mark from Prairie du Sac for already getting in on the action. But tell us, what's the Heritage Center all about?
Well, the Irish Cultural Heritage Center has been around for about 35 years now, and we are home to some of the major players of Milwaukee Irish groups, the Shamrock Club of Wisconsin, the Ancient Order of Hibernians, which is one of the oldest fraternal organizations from Ireland to be in the States. We also had some dance groups. We are host to a couple of bagpipe groups in Milwaukee as well. We have a huge Irish lending library. We also have the Irish Genealogy Societies in our building. And we in the past have done concerts and readings and such like that. So we do quite a bit. We're a big hub in the city of Milwaukee.
So the Ancient Order of the Hibernians, Corey, this is a very old group, and I have a couple of friends of the family and family that have been involved with the Hibernians. Can you tell, what is the name Hibernian?
Hibernian is a name that they used to call the Irish. Now, the Hibernians, what they would do is they would protect the priests so they could give mass and give communion to the Catholics versus the Protestants way back when. And it was kind of also a little slang where, like, here come the Hibernians, and they would protect everybody. So we were there to protect the priests and take care of the Irish cultural, obviously, in Ireland back in the long time ago.
Yeah, it sounds like the stuff of a Dan Brown novel, right? Not yes, the Illuminati. Yes, it's the Hibernians. Yes,
something you're definitely hearing on the History Channel.
Exactly. We've got a question here from Ollie in the Northwoods, if you don't mind, Corey. Hey, Ollie, say hello to Corey. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I would like to ask Corey if he could explain a little bit about a musical instrument, and I think it might be called Yulin, but I might be wrong, that is like a bagpipe, only it's played under the arm. It's got such a wonderful sound, and I've heard it on many Irish songs, and I would like to learn a little bit more about that.
Corey, put you on the spot here for, we're doing part two on Irish music. I have a couple of things if you don't, but feel free to take it first, my guest.
Mr. Sure. I would say that your second guest obviously will have a little more information on that. And I'm not really sure if I heard it correctly, but if she's singing something like the bagpipes, it's the Yulian pipes. And that's played on the lap. Instead of actually hold on their shoulder, what they do is they put it on their lap and they can crush it. I know the chieftains, Paddy Mullen, he used to play that quite a bit, and it is a beautiful instrument, and it's a little softer than a bagpipe. If that's what she's talking about, that's what that does. I don't necessarily know the history of that instrument very well, but I'm sure the second guest you have on will probably know more than I would.
Yeah, it's the Yulian pipes. They do sound like bagpipes, but again, if you're in a small Irish pub, they don't blow you out of the water like your more traditional Scottish bagpipe will. Now, the Scottish bagpipe has got the windbag, if you will, under the arm. Yep. The Yulian pipes, again, are played by having that part of the contraption sort of on your lap.
And they can do it by their foot, or they can do it by their arm by going up and down and actually generate a pump.
Yes.
To actually get the wind in there to make it make the sound.
And you can play it while sitting, which is a wee bit tricky. You can do that with a bagpipe, but it's a little harder, I would say. Yeah. Anyways, thanks for the great question, Ollie. If you have questions or comments, 855.
One more point about that as well, Maggie, is it's obviously easier to sing when you're playing the Yulin pipe because you can't really sing while you're blowing on a bagpipe. So that's where a lot of people come in with that idea.
Thank you for that. I forgot the most important point about that is that the wind isn't being generated by your lungs, which helps with the singing. I also, since we're there, I did want to mention just a couple of other things because our last guest, they're not coming up, but our last guest was an Irish musician. You often will also hear banjo in Irish music, which is Irish. There are actually different types of banjo. There's like a tenor banjo and some others. Of course, one of the most signature sounds being the Bowron, which is the big drum. Without it, you kind of, it doesn't quite sound the same. And with it, it immediately sounds like Irish music. Of course, guitar, Irish whistle, flute, the accordion even sometimes, which I think is really cool for
accordion, more of, the fiddle.
Yes, of course.
Fiddle's also very big in there. And with the banjo and those type of instruments, it's just string instruments, which again, you know, the Irish didn't have a lot of money back then. And that's how a lot of these musicians started, was let's build our own thing and make our own sound. And that's why you get some of those haunting reels and jigs that you just can't get anywhere else.
Yes. Well, let's turn a little bit to the additional elements of heritage that is Irish heritage. Can you remind everyone, Corey, what the origins of St. Patrick's Day are? It goes back quite a long, long time.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of people obviously think of St. Patrick, and obviously you see it in the cards and you see it on, you know, people's t-shirts like, hey, we're the snakes. Oh, St. Patrick took care of them. That's not necessarily true. Basically, where that came from is St. Patrick was British, came to the Irish Isles and taught them Catholicism. And when they did that, he used obviously the shamrock to show the three symbols of the Holy Trinity. And when the snakes came in, is that was him driving out the evil of other religion, if you will, to have people realize that you shouldn't be a pagan, you should be a Catholic. And that's where kind of the snakes came in, because it was just like the Garden of Eden. Let's get rid of the snake because he made him eat the apple. And there we are.
So metaphoric.
So that's a lot most, where St. Patrick comes from.
Yes, metaphoric. And one of the interesting things, when I was in college, I traveled extensively around Ireland, which was back in the, let's see, I would have been there in 97. So it was still during, you know, there was still some tension and there was still some sporadic violence. But the thing I thought was super interesting is I was actually there on St. Patrick's Day. And in Ireland, everybody goes to church and that's it. It's not the American, like, let's dye a river green and have green beer type of thing.
Absolutely.
So it's much more of a religious observance in Ireland than here.
Yes, everybody used to ask me when I was, you know, younger, and they'd say, oh, what do you do in Ireland when, you know, what would your family have done? I'm like, well, they would have went to church.
Church.
And then they would have had a nice meal at home. And that usually was where the stew would come from. They'd have stew or they have cod dinner. And then afterwards, the men would go to the pub and kind of, you know, enjoy their holy day off by having a pint or two.
Yes.
And then obviously the common people would come in and have their instruments, and they'd do a little free-for-all there, if you will. And that's where that came from. I know a lot of people here are like, oh, it's all day. We start at 6 in the morning. Unfortunately, some people are done by 7 in the morning, and
yes,
we know who they are. and I always tell people it's a marathon, not a sprint. So, you know, choose yourself wisely and be responsible while you're out there. But yes, for years, Ireland was nothing like that. But then when people, like you said, would go there from America to Ireland, they're like, well, geez, where's the green hats and the beer and the this and the that? And Ireland, obviously, cashing on some of their tourism, said, well, we need to start doing this. Now they have huge parades as well, and they do a lot of the gallantry and pageantry, if you will, of doing the St. Patrick's Day. But yeah, early on, it was just, we went to church, you had a nice meal with the family, and then maybe you went to the pub for a little bit, and that was about it.
Yeah, very different. Now, the tradition of celebrating St. Patrick's Day in the United States is very old. In fact, older even than the year that most people attribute to sort of the beginnings of our country. The first St. Patrick's Day parade was held in Boston in 1737. I'm going to say that again, 1737. There was enough Irish folk in Boston to be like, we should get together and have a parade. And of course, the very notable New York City St. Patrick's Day parade started in 1762. Today, there's over 150 various St. Patrick's Day parades happening either on the weekend or on the day of throughout the country. Have you been to one of the big ones, Corey, like Boston, New York, Chicago?
I have been. My wife and I have both been to Chicago for their parade, and that is it's unbelievable. And it's nice to see. And I will say this, though, I've never seen more T-shirts, sweatshirts given away from politicians and and trades. It's a totally different vibe than our Milwaukee one. Our Milwaukee one is very nice. It's large, but it's, you know, it's got politicians in it. But Chicago's almost, like the last one we went to was almost 3 hours long.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that was when George Bush was being the marshal. And of course, he couldn't walk. So that was a big standstill for that. But yeah, I have been to their parades, and it's a wonderful sight. And it's amazing. Like I said, there's only 300,000 in Wisconsin that claim Irish ancestry, but when you go to today, everybody's Irish.
Of course, everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day, and of course, here in Wisconsin, also during Irish Fest, everybody's Irish for that. We are going to spend the next, starting at the top of the hour, everybody, sharing some of the stories. I'll share a bit about my Irish genealogy that I've learned from my mom, some of my travels in Ireland. I have actually never been to the Chicago St. Patrick's Day Parade, but I have been to New York's when I lived there, Corey. And that it was stinking huge. And I remember very distinctly the Irish basically like band / marshals from the NYPD. They had like their own like bagpipe group with drums. It was pretty mind blowing. Now the other St. Patrick's Day parade I've been to in and around Chicago was I went to one in Beverly, and Beverly is on the south side of Chicago. And if you don't know Beverly, because you're either not Irish or not Irish from Chicago, Beverly is this very near Chicago small suburb. But it basically used to be almost an exclusively Irish ethnic neighborhood, like many of the neighborhoods here in Milwaukee.
Yes.
And in many...
Milwaukee used to have the Third Ward. So the Third Ward was majority of Irish back in the 1800s and 1900s.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit, is that the primary area of the city where Irish people tended to settle? And where else did Irish folk tend to move when they came to the Midwest, Corey? Obviously, well, Chicago.
Sure. No, they came to Sheboygan, Fond du Lac, up north as much as Trapelo County, and Milwaukee, obviously. And the Third Ward was something where they went. And it's like the old sign. They're going to have, obviously, the people say it never happened, but, you know, help wanted, no Irish need apply.
Yes.
There were so many immigrants at one point that they just didn't know where to have jobs. So that's where you got your fire and your police, because those were jobs that needed to be done and nobody wanted them at that time. So that's what they did. And that's why you had such a huge unit of like FDNY. They have their own pipe band. Milwaukee Fire and Police have their own Greater Fire and Police Bagpipe Band. A lot of these were in there because they had pride and they had a job. It was important to the community. They were giving back to their community, and they were found that they were actually needed, wanted, and respected. And that helps anybody. And when you talk about that sort of thing, everything's, well, what do you mean? That could never happen. Well, that's how it happened. I mean, it just was so many immigrants coming in, and you just didn't know what to do, and they just had to find jobs to keep their family. And it's something that they could do. It was also a fraternal organization where you had so many of your own kind, if you will, that they could take it and run with it and be what they wanted to be.
Folks, we're going to take care of a little business. We're going to come right back with Corey Webster. He's from the Irish Heritage Center here in Milwaukee. We'll talk more about what brought the Irish to the United States in the first place. All on this special St. Patrick's Day episode of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. The good luck and stories of Irish in Wisconsin continue after these brief messages.
Mm-hmm.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Are you 55 or older and struggle to do everyday activities? Is your mobility slowing down? The Southwood County YMCA is here to help, not only with your physical health, but for your overall health as well, spirit, mind, and body. The Southwood County YMCA is committed to supporting our members in their health journeys through programs such as group fitness and nutrition classes, as well as our older adult program, Forever Well. This is a member benefit and does not cost anything to participate. Stop by today and learn how you can live a healthier life with the Southwood County YMCA.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. If you were an Irish Catholic immigrant in the 1840s through the 1920s, many of your Protestant fellow Americans, some of whom joined the xenophobic Know Nothing Party, tried to suppress your vote. A famine in Ireland and economic instability in Germany saw millions of immigrants coming to America beginning in the 1820s. According to Smithsonian Magazine, between 1845 and 1854, 2.9 million immigrants arrived, including an estimated one quarter of Ireland's entire population. In cities like New York and Boston, the mostly Protestant American political elite saw Irish Catholics as a threat to their American culture. In 1849, the shadowy Know Nothing Party arose, a cross between a political party and a street gang, and grew to America's first sizable third party. Historian J.P. Dolan found the Know-Nothings elected 8 governors, 100 congressmen, and several mayors. Abraham Lincoln wrote, "When the Know-Nothings get control, it will read, 'All men are created equal, except Negroes and foreigners and Catholics.'" They proposed a 21-year wait time for foreign-born immigrants to vote, tried to ban Catholics and foreigners from holding office, even deporting 300 Irish immigrants back to Liverpool. But Irish immigrants, when they could vote, voted in higher numbers. By the 1880s, they became a political force in Boston, New York, and Chicago. I'm Brian Beal.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, taking a brief break from the politics, but it may come seeping back in here in some way, shape, or form as we talk about the background of Irish folks coming to the United States as well as coming to the state of Wisconsin. Got a great guest this half hour. His name's Corey Webster. He's with the Irish Heritage Center in Milwaukee. Let's pick up where we left off, Corey. We're talking, everyone, if you've studied a wee bit of American history, have heard about the fact that Irish, as well as Italian, depending on both city and time period, were kind of considered like the lowest of the low immigrants for a very long time. And the signs Irish need not apply. People, especially in these larger, both East Coast and sort of central cities, and by that I mean Philly, Chicago, Milwaukee, right? Very much pushed into tenement style living. That became its own source of ghettoization, if you will, for Irish folks. And tell us, What led to the anti-Irish sentiments here in the United States? But before that, maybe I should start before that. Why did the Irish start coming to the United States in such large numbers back in the, depends on who you ask when they started to come in big numbers, right? But like, I'm going to peg it at like around 1830, and then it got real busy.
Why? 1830s is a huge time for us. 1830s is when the Irish started coming to Wisconsin. And I'll say about 1800, 1810, obviously you had the Ungottamore, which was the Great Potato Famine.
Yes.
The famine was obviously devastating. Imagine, you know, if you will, back to COVID, we could not find toilet paper. Imagine if you couldn't find food. There was just no food. The landowners were wealthy, and they were usually British, and they lent the land in Ireland to the Irish. Well, the only thing they had was the potato, because everything else was made for the lords or the renters, and that would be the beef and the wheat and everything else. So that was given back to Britain. And when the potato famine hit, it was just devastating. It was absolutely devastating. So people had to get out. And it got so bad that you also had something called the coffin ships. People were just taking any boat they could possibly get to America, because if they had relatives that went there, they would mail and say, we're doing great. We're doing this. We have a job. We have a house. We own our own things. And when I got more hit, everybody wanted to come to America, or at least Canada. Canada was another one where they got a lot of Irish during that time. Well, when you have, you know, hundreds of boats coming in with thousands and thousands of immigrants, if you will, and the Irish especially at that point, where are you going to get a job? And then it became, well, you're getting a job. Now my son didn't get a job. And, you know, unfortunately, we see that even today a little bit. And I, like you said, we don't want to talk politics right now, but we know what we're talking about. It comes and goes with every generation, unfortunately, and hopefully it's not as bad as it was back when Ireland had the famine. But people were sick of seeing the Irish. Every time you turn around, you see an Irishman or an Italian, like you alluded to before. So people really didn't want that. So they end up taking the jobs that nobody wanted, like I stated before, either policemen, firemen. They became farmers. They became lumberjacks. They became railroad workers. You know, any job they could find to make money. And again, they're used to a certain lifestyle, just like if you came from some other country and came here, it's kind of a culture shock. You're not used to this. People are walking around with money. They have horses. They have, you know, they have big mansions, houses, if you will. And to them, that was mansions. Same with the Polish when they came here. When they first got to buy a flat in Milwaukee, that was a duplex. So that was like owning a castle. That was huge for them. So when you have that influx of people, you're always going to have your so-called, you know, native to the country, whether it be, you know, a true American, if you will, or whatever you want to call it. They didn't want it to be there. They're like, you're taking jobs from us. Now you're doing this. Now you're doing that. And that's where the stereotypes come in, so they can make it sound like you're a second-class citizen. We're drunks. You're fighters. You don't speak English well. You know, that's where, unfortunately, a lot of those things happen.
Which always is incredibly ironic to me, like, James Joyce. Yep. Well, we do not have good mastery of the English. Come on now. But echoes of this, every wave of people coming to this country were fleeing something, coming here right to find something better, and often met with anger and suspicion and segregation by those that were perceived to already be here, right? Whatever that is. Corey, where can people find out more about the Irish Heritage Center? And if folks want to learn more about their Irish heritage or Irish folks specifically in Wisconsin, where might you guide them?
Well, the Irish Cultural Center is on 21st and Wisconsin Avenue, close to downtown and Marquette University in Milwaukee. And they can go to our website, which is ichc.com. And we have a website there, and they also have the genealogy on there, so they can check out their own genealogy. And everything is that we do is volunteerism. And just to touch on that, talking about everybody that came in, back when everybody came here, they wanted to make sure that they still kept a piece of home with them. And that's where we get our reels and our jigs and our bagpipes. And, you know, and this is where every culminates into this. We're going out for St. Patrick's Day to celebrate really well. The problem we're having now in every group around the city and the state is nobody wants to step in to volunteer for these roles. And that's hard to do because you can't keep it up. If people don't want to forget what they had, they're going to have to step up and volunteer and help out a little bit, or at least get interested in what they want to do.
Folks, that's Corey Webster of the Irish Cultural Heritage Center in Milwaukee. You, if you enjoy Irish music and Irish culture, especially if you've got some Irish genealogy in your family tree, volunteer at the ICHC. Find out more at ichc.com. We come back. I'm going to share a bit about my own Irish ancestry, some travels in Ireland, and more Irish history, all on this special St. Patrick's Day episode of The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks so much, Corey. Happy St. Pat's to you.
And you, same to you, Maggie.
We'll be right back. Keep it locked.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz is coming to Eau Claire to do a town hall in Derek Van Orden's district, since Derek Van Orden appears to be a little shy.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly imperfect. Beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The White House today defended the deportation of hundreds of migrants, even as a judge ordered it be halted. Many were Venezuelans said to be gang members.
These are heinous monsters, rapists, murderers, kidnappers, sexual assaulters, predators who have no right to be in this country, and they must be held accountable.
President Trump says he'll annul President Biden's pardons because Biden used an auto pen. CBS's Jake Rosen.
Presidents have done this for years, and many things that presidents do when you're signing dozens and hundreds potentially of documents a day are not all signed with an actual paper and pen and scanned into the government record.
There's a massive cleanup ahead for the Midwest and South after the deadly weekend storms. Ken Hamilton lives in Oklahoma, where more than 400 homes were destroyed.
I thank God I'm alive. This can be replaced.
40 people were killed after the storms kicked up wildfires, tornadoes, and dust across seven states. CBS News Brief. I'm Cammie McCormick.
Hi, this